Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and had a good weekend. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast on Monday, December the 15th. Coming up, there are concerns about plans for hundreds of new homes in Paddock Wood. A Kent woman whose husband died while scuba diving offers support to other widows this Christmas. And it was a very busy weekend of football. We got reaction from the boss of Chatham Town's women after their success in the FA Cup. But first, thousands of fines issued to drivers on a road in Medway could be void after a tribunal overturned a business owner's penalty. Chris Lee got a ticket for driving on Richmond Road in Gillingham, which is a designated school street. Now that means vehicles shouldn't use the road at designated times around the school run in the morning and in the afternoon. So effectively drop off and pick up. Chris has been speaking to Ollie Leader from the local Democracy Reporting Service.
You get the form come through the post and you just think to yourself, oh, I'm the one that's in the wrong. If you actually bother to do your homework and go over the route that you've taken and actually look at the adjudicator's decision that fortunately enough I've got, there are rules and regulations that Medway Council are not meeting, and they know those rules and regulations have not been met. So they are being dishonest and handing out fines to motorists and for people who use those streets without putting diversionary signs so you can avoid getting a fine.
One of the things the adjudicator said is it's not just the positioning of the sign, it's the amount of writing on it. Do you think that it is a hard to read sign, that if you're driving along, maybe not familiar with the area, that it's something that would confuse you as a motorist?
Well, a reasonable person is not going to be looking at lampposts for every single sign. If it's overwordy, by the time you've even got halfway down it, you've gone past it. So you may well have missed the relevant piece of information that is going to tell you it's a school zone. So the adjudicator actually said that the signage is incorrect and overwordy. So Medway Council must surely know these things. It can't be just a one-off.
More than 24,000 fines have been issued across the 12 school street zones since the first ones were introduced in March last year. This is the response we've had from Medway Council.
We have successfully defended a number of appeals at this location, and this is the first in which an adjudicator has found against us on signage grounds. While we will review the adjudicator's decision, we remain satisfied that signage at this site is adequate and compliant with the relevant legal standards. We will continue to review feedback, including comments on signage, to ensure the scheme operates effectively.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and people from the Jewish community in Kent say they're worried for their safety after an attack at Bondi Beach in Australia. A father and son opened fire during Hanukkah celebrations in Sydney, killing 15 people and injuring dozens more. Politicians, including the Dover MP Mike Tapp and Medway Council leader Vince Maple, are among those offering support and solidarity to the victims. A person's been treated by paramedics following a fire at a house in Dover. Crews in three engines were sent to tackle the blaze on Christchurch Way yesterday morning. They spent more than an hour putting out the flames. A fence fire that broke out in Chatham is being treated as a suspected arson attack. Crews were called to tackle the blaze in Elmhurst Gardens in the early hours of yesterday. No one was hurt, but it's thought to have been started deliberately. Now, a group of residents in Paddock Wood have started a campaign to try and stop almost 800 homes from being built on fields in the town which are prone to flooding. The development would also include a primary school, three traveller pitches and a local centre, and would be on 90 hectares of land which is currently agricultural. Well, Chris Downs is from the Stop Overdevelopment of Paddock Wood Group. He's been speaking to reporter Ellie Hodgson.
It's just not planned properly. It's too much. You know, it's going to be horrendous to live here going forward once they've done this. Absolutely horrendous. I mean, we're a little unique place. You know, we're surrounded by fields, but there's a reason for that, is that basically, you know, we've got a massive floodplain that we sit on. Simple as that. You know, the crops they grow on here aren't good quality crops. Therefore, yeah, you know, it could be developed upon. We used to have a lot of animals. Orchards around here, no, they've all gone. due to various reasons in the past decades, probably. So it's just too much. They're not listening to the residents here who know the problems of Paddock Wood. Okay.
I wonder, so as the part of the group, what is your objective at this stage, and what is sort of your message to the developers at this stage?
We give the same message to developers and to the council. It is too much development, for this area. And it's the infrastructure, stupid. Look at the infrastructure to support this, okay? Because all the developers are concerned about is the number of houses they can put in a bit of land, when they can build them, how much they can get for them, all right? What do they have to give, to the council for their Section 206 money, which the council goes, thank you very much. We've had no benefit at all from developments that have gone in so far, and we don't expect any benefit from developments going forward. And all it does is create more problems for the residents that are here.
And what is your message to residents at the moment? Obviously, the planning application has been submitted. Are you urging people to go online and put their objection?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. We are urging people to go online, put their objections in, be precise, don't rant, but it's very difficult not to rant, put in precise objections and reasons for that. So that is part of our campaign now, is to reach out to our own residents to respond.
Chris has been outlining his concerns that, well, developers say the consultation process is ongoing, adding that they'll review all comments submitted. They've also told us they'll continue to work with the community and council to understand what's required to make the development acceptable and to ensure that the right supporting infrastructure is delivered. Elsewhere, the planning inspectorate's going to have the final say on whether 800 homes should be built near a busy road in Medway. Developers want to put the properties on land close to the A289 Wainscott bypass. It's been recommended for refusal ahead of a council meeting next week. A government inspector will then make a final decision. And it's feared green space in Ashford could become even more overgrown as a decision on its future has been delayed until next summer. The land in Quantock Drive has been fenced off since July following an application to protect it from development.
Kent Online reports.
Now, it's been confirmed 737 asylum seekers crossed the Channel to Kent in 11 small boats on Saturday. That was after 28 days with no crossings, the longest pause in arrivals for 7 years. The Home Secretary's defended the money spent on a one-in, one-out returns agreement with France. A vape store on Canterbury High Street has had its application to sell alcohol rejected. It follows a dispute over who's involved in running all-in-one bazaar. A City Council committee say they can't be sure the licensing objectives will be upheld if permission's given. Now, a Kent woman whose husband died while scuba diving has joined forces with three other widows in a bid to help others who are dealing with grief at Christmas. Ben Moss disappeared after failing to resurface in March 2018 and his body has never been found. Rosie, who lives in Westmorling, was 37 at the time with three young children. She's now part of the Widowed Collective, which provides free peer-to-peer support and has been chatting to me, particularly about what it's like at Christmas.
If you're widowed, you are very, very sensitive to the bombardment of those matching Christmas pyjamas and the happy families. And it's not that you begrudge anybody else having Christmas joy, of course you don't. But seeing all that, it can exacerbate all those feelings of isolation and loneliness and things like that empty chair at the Christmas table and, one less stocking hanging by the fire. There's a lot of very sort of emotive visual reminders that somebody you love is missing.
You very sadly lost your husband back in 2018. And obviously dealing with that would have been just awful at the time. How did you find, and because you had a very, very young family. Yeah. As well, how did you even start to navigate things like Christmas? Because I can't put myself in your shoes, Rosie. I can't even imagine how difficult that must have been for you, especially in those first years.
Yeah, so my children, they were young, you're right, they were 7, 5 and 6 months old. And you feel this massive obligation to keep magic around because they've lost so much. They've had, they've had a parent stolen from them. They've had the thing that is used in children's films and books to demonstrate adversity. And this thing has happened to your children. So for me, I really struggled. Ben and I were big on Christmas. He had a big family. He was one of six. And we used to spend Christmas either at his house or with my parents. And so the first Christmas, I really didn't know what to do. I didn't even want to buy a Christmas tree, if I'm honest with you. It just felt wrong. It felt completely wrong to go through these normal celebratory acts. So I put a holiday on the credit card that I could ill afford, and I took my children away. And it was one of those impulsive, kind of irrational decisions, but it was one of the best things I did, because we woke up in the sunshine, my parents came, thank goodness, and we had a completely different Christmas. And so since then, I've always tried to do something a little bit different. I can't always afford to take them abroad, sadly, but things like one Christmas, they didn't go in the sea, but I jumped in the sea on Christmas morning and, you know, got a bit of dopamine that way. So you're very much having to try and find ways that can bring that joy and that magic into their lives, but without completely overwhelming and destroying your kind of fragile mental state at the time.
As you say, there's lots of visual reminders. And it's interesting that you mention films as well, actually, because there seems to be a theme, doesn't there? And does it annoy you a bit about how those things are portrayed and how situations are portrayed? Do you think perhaps a bit more thought should go into things like that?
It's one of these things that you only notice when you're in the position that I am. Because until this point, I'd never really clocked that most Disney films have a dead parent in them. But they do. And I think when you are looking, particularly with little children, you're looking for, you know, nice family films, storybooks, that sort of thing. And so often there is that narrative of a child's parent dying and then seeing the arc of this child come through. So does it annoy me? Perhaps sometimes when you're looking at a new film that's out and you have to, you go onto a grief group and say, is this okay for me to take my children to, or is it going to be really upsetting? And I think that people do, understandably, they won't consider the fact of bereaved children and how that message is kind of bombarded at them throughout the festive period.
So tell us a bit about the campaign at the moment, because you want to make sure that people don't feel alone. What sort of support is out there?
Widow support is one of the fundamental parts of healing. I can't sit here and say to anybody that's grieving that you're ever going to get over it, because you're absolutely not. But what you are going to do is you're hopefully going to begin to grow some life around it. So what Nikki Wake has done, along with myself and two other widows, has created something called the Widowed Collective. This is a completely new, completely free of charge group, and it is designed to support widows through all phases of widowhood. And we do include men in that as well. I think the word widow often is associated with women, but in my world on the podcast and within the context of this, widow is anybody who's lost a romantic partner. So this group is going to create a space where widows can meet. There's an online meeting every Monday, so you can have that real connection every week. And it's somewhere where you can speak to your peers about share ideas. I mean, that's another one, isn't it? Share ideas. How do other people remember their people at Christmas? We have a little photo on the Christmas tree, but other people might do it in different ways. So it's about practical advice. It's about that kind of online community. And I genuinely believe that isolation and loneliness are the biggest threats to somebody who's grieving. There is no guidebook. I mean, actually, that's not true. There will be in March when my book is out. I'll just slip that in there. But there isn't a guide, but there isn't something that tells you how to navigate all these stages of widowhood. So what we're doing is we're creating a community that will do just that.
And I guess as well, everyone's going to be different, aren't they? Everyone's going to deal with situations differently. Everyone's going to, I mean, did you ever feel guilty that perhaps you were celebrating an event with the children, or, you know, there was a moment in and you thought, oh, I feel happy today. And then you feel the guilt afterwards because you've had a good day. And everyone's, particularly at this time of year, it must really be up and down as to how people are feeling.
So, of course, people don't always process their grief properly. We're all individuals, and nobody's children are going to process grief the same way either. And this is something that I felt very confused by in the early days of widowhood. And it's this idea that, I mean, I'll give you a little bit of context. The moment I told my children, my boys, that their dad had died, the most harrowing and traumatic thing I've ever had to do. But about 10 minutes later, they had Harry Potter costumes on and they were playing. And I thought at the time, what is wrong with my children? Why aren't they sad? I now know that children process grief very differently. There's a lovely analogy about them jumping in and out of it like a puddle. So yes, there's a guilt, but there's also an obligation Because if I don't express joy and I don't show my children how to express joy, they're going to grow up really sad. And the one thing I do not want to happen is for my children to be defined by this terrible thing that's happened to them. So, yeah, there are moments of guilt, particularly early on. You know, you find yourself laughing, or, you know, you might even not think about them for a little bit. And that in itself can feel like a betrayal. So I do think that one of the real fundamentals to growing through grief, if that's not too much of a cheesy statement, is that you accept your sadness and you let it live alongside the joy, because they're not, they can coexist, you know, they can. And I think once you accept that, you accept the fact that this is your life now.
Kent Online reports.
There are calls for hoardings to be put around a derelict building in Deal. The original factory shop in the High Street closed in September last year and is starting to fall into disrepair. Plans for 5 new shops and 17 flats at the site have already been approved, but work hasn't started yet due to an ongoing dispute. Part of the M20 will be closed overnight as Operation Brock is put in place in the lead up to Christmas. The stretch between junctions 8 and 9, both coast and London bound, will be shut from 8 p.m. until 6 tomorrow morning. So the contraflow can be installed to help deal with holiday traffic heading to the Port of Dover. The old town hall in Gravesend is going to be transformed into an event and wedding space. The Grade 2 listed building on the High Street was sold by the County Council in September, as the authority couldn't afford to continue maintaining the site. Well, it's been taken over by Olaide Dagundero, who's been running events with her husband for 10 years. She's been telling reporter Alex Langridge what the building will be used for.
The plan for this building is to bring life back to the community. So we'll be doing weddings, events like birthdays, after school club, yoga sessions, different things actually, just to bring life back to the community.
And what, obviously you've only had the keys for a few months, but kind of what have you kind of started at the minute? What's kind of the plan going forward?
So what we've done is put licensing in and waiting for application to go through. In the meantime, a little bit of refurbishment, like painting, like for like. And we've had actually 2 events that has been a success, not causing nuisance to the community. So far, it's been amazing.
And you said, you know, some people have seen you coming and going and kind of spoke to you about what you're doing. So what's the response been so far?
To be honest, the response has been absolutely amazing. We spoke to quite a few of our residents around here to see and to tell them that, okay, we're starting this. What's your take on it? And majority of them they've come back to us to say, it'll be nice to see life back in this place. And they're excited to see what we turn this place and what we use this place for. So we are really hoping the best within the community since we've spoken to them and they love it.
And what are you hoping, you know, out of it to come? You know, what are you hoping to see?
I would say, well, of course, it's a business, profit, one. Secondly, we're going to retain all of the features as an iconic and historic building. So majority of the features will stay the same. And I was telling you, there's a war memorial names in there, and we're going to leave that as it is as well. So we'll retain the historic part of the building and also bring some freshness into this.
The refurb is expected to cost around £100,000. A pub near Tenterden that's been closed for almost a decade could be turned into housing. The Crown Inn in Stone in Oxney is 300 years old, but the owners say it's no longer financially viable as a business. They've put in plans to convert the property into a 5-bed home with a 1-bed annex. Meantime, plans have been submitted to install a free outdoor gym at a beach near Dover. It includes 10 pieces of equipment on the seafront off the Strand in Woolmer next to the Adventure Golf Course. Bosses say it would help improve people's physical and mental health. And the finalists have been confirmed for this year's series of Strictly. Kent's Belvinda Sopal hasn't managed to make it through after losing the dance-off to reality star Amber Davis. She'll join former footballer Karen Carney and social media star George Clark in competing for the Glitterball Trophy.
Kent Online Sports.
Football, and it really was a game of two halves for Gillingham on Saturday. They ended up with a draw against Barrow despite being 2-0 up at half time. Manager Gareth Ainsworth spoke to us after the final whistle at Priestfield.
I'm really disappointed. We were so good first half, you know, we looked like we were taking the game to Barrow. We looked like the team that was in the playoffs, and Barrow were the team at the bottom of the league, and then absolutely flipped on its head second half. You know, they had more possession of the ball, had the better chances. It's just, you know, bewilders me why we sort of dropped so deep and started defending the lead when I asked them to go and score more goals at half time. I said, go and score more, go and get 4, go and get 5. We've done that to teams, and it's not nice being on the end of it, you know, and that's You know, we weren't as good second half by a long shot. You know, the changes, obviously I wanted to make impacts. I don't think they made good impacts. I don't think they changed much. Barrow had possession. There seemed to be big gaps, you know, on the pitch where they could, just like we were in the first half. I mean, you know, I want to talk about the first half. You know, Bradley, Armani and Ethan in there were just superb, you know, getting all the balls, second balls, spraying the ball about. We created numerous chances, you know, and I was expecting that second half. But, no, you've got to give credit to the opposition. But, wow, that was a shock to me.
Is that this league, in a nutshell, if you did come off the throttle just temporarily, you can get bitten?
It's this league, but it's also probably a little glimpse of what's been going on here for a while, you know, and I definitely need to address that, because I want characters, I want confident players, I want players who believe that they can go and win games. You know, at the start of the season we were doing that. You know, I don't want to blame the injuries, but I think, you know, a couple of the big men being out, that might have helped second half. It would have made the ball stick up front more, and that would have definitely have helped. But you know, you expect the boys to come away with a win after being 2-0 up against Barrow at home at half time. You know, I'm not surprised we got some boos at the end. You know, they're entitled to their opinion, and that's football. I'll be trying to put it right as much as I can now.
That result means the Jewels are now 10th in League Two. Elsewhere, there were mixed results for Kent's teams in the third round of the Women's FA Cup. Dartford have been knocked out of the competition after losing 3-2 to London Bees, but Chatham Town are through to the next stage after beating Sutton United 3-0. The draw for the fourth round takes place tonight. Here's manager Keith Buanas.
Be nice to get a home tie, whoever it is. And I mean whoever it is. If it's a big club, great. It will be a great revenue earner. If it's a club around our level, then we know we can go and push and get into the fifth round as well, even if it's a Championship club. WSL1, you know, I'm not going to be stupid. It would take a lot more to get past that level of fitness and professionalism. But I still wouldn't be scared of that, and our players would rise to the occasion. If it's a couple of the Championship clubs or a Tier 3 side, or obviously a side in our own tier that's still in it, I'd fancy our chances.
Finally, in football, London City Lionesses have been beaten by Leicester City in the Women's Super League. The side who trained near Aylesford lost 1-0 away from home. They're currently sixth in the table. And in ice hockey, Kent's Invicta Dynamos completely dominated in their match against Cardiff Fire at the weekend. The match in Gillingham finished 10-0 with the win, putting the Dynamos third in the South Division 1 table. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials, plus you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up for that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can also sign up to Kent Online Premium. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.